This is Kendall Mead of Mascot, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David White of Greenville, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, May 31st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Aina de Lamparent Alvarez reports in the Berkshire Eagle that the Tri-Town Connector public transit service has been running between Great Barrington, Stockbridge, and Egremont since May 1st. Anne Freyberg of Egremont said, quote, "It's wonderful. I use it a lot because I don't have a car at the moment. I hope they expand to Lenox and Sheffield, which I frequently go to," unquote. The service runs from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays and 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on weekends, charging residents $2 to travel within a town and $3.50 to travel between them, with anyone over 60 getting reduced fares. Tate Coleman, the program director at the Tri-Town Connector, said, quote, "The goal of this service isn't really to maximize efficiency riders per hour relative to other fixed route alternatives, but to provide a greater quality of service to our residents, especially seniors and individuals with disabilities," unquote. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Maria M. Silva reports in the Times Union that it is difficult enough for most people to find an apartment locally, but it is much harder if one has a pet. About 30% of renters in Ulster County are paying almost half of their income in rent. In New Paltz, 70% of households are rentals, and the average rent increased 11% from 2019 to 2020 during the pandemic. Gina Edergy Carbonari, executive director of the Ulster County SPCA, said she has seen people making housing decisions based on pets. Quote, "Folks who are struggling and have pets, they're having to make decisions sometimes. Do I feed my pet or do I feed myself? Am I going to live out of my car with my pet or am I going to go into a shelter? Because the shelter is not going to take my pet, so it really puts them in a really difficult position because we're telling them you have to give up your family member," unquote. "And if one cannot find a home but has a pet, they are out of luck, too. Currently, no homeless shelters in the Hudson Valley accept people and pets together," said Christine Kim, founder of My Dog Is My Home, a national nonprofit that works to increase access to shelter and housing for people experiencing homelessness and their pets. "So finding any place for people and pets to live together is difficult and costly. Quote, it's pretty defeating," unquote, said Emma, who asked that her last name not be used. Quote, "There just needs to be a lot more compassion and understanding and a lot less of this capitalist mindset of like, oh, there's demand, let's hike the prices up $500 more because nobody that lives around here works around here anymore," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Assemblymember Corrine Rees and State Senator Michael Giannaris, both Democrats, are proposing allowing all New Yorkers to vote by mail. 2021, voters rejected a constitutional amendment to allow no-excuse absentee balloting. Janaris is persisting, saying, quote, "Voting is a fundamental right, and the easier we make it to vote, the healthier our democracy will be. I am proud the state Senate continues to build on its important work of expanding access to the ballot box for all New Yorkers," unquote. In the recent past, Republican and Conservative Party leaders in New York have objected to efforts to expand voting options. Conservative Party Chair Jared Kossar questioned how many votes election officials could handle, saying, quote, "That should be of a great concern to the electoral franchise, so we do not believe the boards of elections have shown themselves to be able to handle this type of voting at mass volume," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, May 31st. Local early morning temperatures range from 42 degrees in Steventown to 54 in Tannersville. Regional average soil temperature is 61 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high and general air quality will fall a bit today as temperatures get up to 82 degrees at 4 p.m. Cloud cover will be low, so be sure to protect against UV exposure. Overnight temperatures drop to 54 degrees then. Tomorrow will be even hotter, hitting 90. Overnight temperatures fall to just 60 degrees. That dew point will reach almost 60 degrees overnight, making it very humid. So be extra careful when you decide to drag out the air conditioner on Friday, which will also be 90 degrees, but also some extra humidity and a stormy looking afternoon comes along with it. Rain persists through Saturday, but then the air cools off and we see a high of only 69 degrees. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:40 a.m., low at 7:19 a.m., high at 12:48 p.m., and low again at 7:25 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 68 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:08 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see we have a minor geomagnetic storm watch on. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 379 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently bad. Well, at least pretty bad, with only fair conditions below 4 megahertz until dark, then fair conditions below 28 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 144. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
My people, what can I say? Say what I can. I saw it, but I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it what I saw. Are we gonna live together? Together, are we gonna live? This is your Mr. Senior Love Daddy talking to you from We Love Radio 108 FM on your dial. And that's the triple truth, Ruth. Today's weather, hot! Wake up!
Night for 40 days a day. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Speaker McCarthy had a mandate from the American people with a powerful negotiation position of a unified Republican Party, not only just in the House, but in the House and the Senate, to hold the line for the bill that we passed. This deal that we've heard about totally fails to deliver on all of it.
Pennsylvania Republican Scott Perry said he and the 44 other members of the Freedom Caucus will not be voting to pass the debt ceiling deal negotiated between President Joe Biden and Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy. Some Republicans indicated they might remove McCarthy from being Speaker as retribution, but McCarthy is confident it will pass and that he'll remain Speaker. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell urged members of their parties to pass the plan and avoid a default. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is confident it will pass, but notes Republican support is faltering from a promise to deliver 150 votes.
What we all are interested in is how many votes are the Republicans who negotiated this resolution going to produce? Initially, we heard that 95% of the House Republican Conference supports the agreement. That doesn't appear to be the case.
Voter advocacy groups have filed lawsuits against Florida's new election law. Along with restricting third-party registration groups, it narrows deadlines and increases fines for late submissions. Esty Connor with DEMOS, a racial justice think tank, argued the law restricts people from being involved in civic affairs.
Really what this law does is it is an attack on the ability of Floridians, regardless of their immigration status, to participate in the democratic process of civic engagement.
Montana environmental advocates say a new law allows the state to ignore climate change impacts when developing large-scale energy projects like coal mines and power plants. The measure builds on a decade-old law prohibiting the state from including actual or potential impacts that are regional, national, or global in nature in environmental reviews of big energy projects. Ann Hedges, with the Montana Environmental Information Center, says the measure leaves natural resources completely unprotected.
You are telling the public and you are telling the state their rights don't matter, that they don't really have a right to a clean and healthful environment, and the state has no obligation to protect people from the very real dangers of the climate crisis.
And an Indiana licensing board fined Dr. Caitlin Bernard $3,000 and gave her a letter of reprimand after going public about a 10-year-old Ohio rape victim having to travel across state lines for an abortion. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Ohioans are mobilizing against Issue 1, an effort by the anti-voter state legislature raising the bar to pass a citizen ballot initiative to 60%. The legislature's proposed constitutional amendment comes up for a vote on August 8th. From our past reports, you know that Ohio is one of several states rushing to raise the threshold to pass a ballot initiative from a simple 50% plus one majority to 60% or more, and to make the qualifying signature rules more difficult. Ohio's current rules have been in place since 1912. Why the rush? Successful 2022 ballot initiatives in Kansas and Michigan enshrined reproductive rights and protected voting, and signatures are already being collected in Ohio for a reproductive rights ballot initiative this November. Earlier this month, Ohio Republicans resurrected a special election in August, removed just last year because of low turnout and its $20 million price tag. Democracy groups are challenging the proposed language of Issue 1 in court, which, because the proposal hasn't yet passed, requires only a 50% plus one majority. The conservative Ohio Supreme Court isn't likely to change Issue 1's language, so pro-democracy coalitions and reproductive rights groups are doing it the old-fashioned way, mobilizing voters to show up for the summertime special election and vote down the assault on the power of the voters. Dive deeper at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
From Catskill, here's Rodney Allen Greenblatt, and from his 2021 album, To Just Be, this is Makeshift Fruit Stand. Thank you.
So, for today's episode, I spoke with Wendy Tachi, the regional coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. Wendy shares how to join Atlas, discusses the joy of appreciating everything around you through atlasing, and also with a nighttime birding tip. I hope you enjoy it. Let's listen to the interview. Thanks for listening.
Could you introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I'm Wendy Tachi. I'm the regional coordinator for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas for the Hudson region. I live in Kingston. I've been here for 20 years, more than 20 years, actually. Yeah, I was at, I went to school at UVM, then I moved to Washington, D.C., and then I moved to Baltimore, and then I moved to Brooklyn, and then I moved here. We were kind of like, the city was expensive. We had a bad living situation. We weren't making money. And like, I wanted to go to Vermont. And my partner was like, and had friends around here and grew up in Millbrook. So this was an easy place to come to. And it's like close enough to like nature. And so it served us well. I feel like I started birding more maybe like 10 or 11 years ago or 12 years ago for the Christmas bird count. And then I started hanging out with John Burroughs Natural History Society. I've been birding with them for years and years, but really, like, I think just joining up with John Burroughs got me more into it. Mm-hmm. And there are always field trips, and everyone's, like, super helpful and friendly and enthusiastic. So, mm-hmm. you know, doing field trips with them. And then just, like, all the citizen science projects. So, like, I don't feel like I'm, like, a professional, like, scientist or conservationist. I'm more just like the citizen science aspect of it is really easy to do and really enjoyable.
I guess it's just the sound of the science, and even the citizen science feels like you have to have some skills or experience.
Yeah.
But I think that's the great thing about New York Breeding Bird Atlas. So I want you to explain briefly what, I mean, it's a big project, so I don't know how brief it can
be. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, the principle is basic. It's surveying like the breeding birds of the state of New York. This is the third breeding bird atlas. It lasts for 5 years, and they're done every 20 years. And this is the third one. So just people with birding experience go out and observe bird behavior and then record what they're seeing. So do you know if a bird's singing, that's a possible breeding code. If you see a pair of birds in suitable habitat, that would be a probable. And then if you see something like bird carrying food, that would be a confirmed breeding code So just as you're out birding, you make your eBird list. That's like a great thing to be able to use eBird, because then everything is like in real time. There's no like filling out cards and having someone else do data entry. So you get a really like real time picture of what's going on as people are entering data. State is split up into blocks, and I think there are over 5,000 blocks, but only some of those are priority blocks. Using the USGS topo quad and breaking it down into six blocks, and of those six, two of them are priority blocks for every quad. It's the northwest block and the central east block. So we're focusing on the priority blocks. That way we can get even spread across the state. Mm-hmm. So the most valuable thing is to find a priority block and to go and atlas in it.
Mm-hmm. So people just go into priority blocks and sit there and see if the birds are breeding.
Yes.
Make just that observation of if the birds are breeding or yep. not. And that tells us the transition of population and basically how the species is doing.
Yep.
Over the course of, you said this is the fifth? The third time.
The third.
5 years each.
Yep. So 1980 was the first. 80 to 84. Then 2000 to 2004. And 2020 to 2024.
So we've already have the picture of over the course of half century.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. eBird is pretty simple.
Yep.
Once you start using it.
Yep.
And so it did feel like the bar has gotten lower to get in. And I mean, I was feeling a little confused by all the breeding codes and stuff until I got trained. I guess I'm still a beginner birder in the sense of like, I don't know. When I see the breeding behavior, I might not be able to necessarily tell, but I feel like less pressured. Like one of the thing we were doing in Columbia County was Kathy was really urging us to go check out Woodcock. Woodcock. So I watched the YouTube videos of Woodcock, and then, you know, this is how it sounds like. This is what they're going to do. This is the time of the day that they would do this. So let's like just try and find that one thing rather than trying to figure out what's going on, like everything that's going on in one spot, but rather like I'm going to really try to find woodcock.
Yep.
And it's like a little bit of a, what do you call that? Like a scavenger hunt almost.
Yep.
So it really made it more fun and felt less intimidated to involved in the science thing. Because I guess the part of the intimidation is really, like, I don't know if I can make the right decision, the right judgment.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm categorizing breeding codes correctly.
I mean, there are some tricky things, but good thing about it, like, you know, you could be, some people, like, I think it's one point in the past, like, you know, you're out to just tick off birds. Like, oh, I saw this bird, this bird, this bird. You see the bird, you know, you tick it off, and then you move on to the next. And you're not really, like, paying attention to, like, what it's doing or what's going on. And I feel with the breeding bird atlasing, you're just like slowing down, and you can allow yourself to take the time to really watch what it's doing, like something you wouldn't normally do. And then, you know, they're resident breeders, so like when I'm out atlasing, I'm like, oh, there's that yellow warbler I saw the same spot last week. You know, what is it doing this week? So you kind of like, it's like you're neighbors. The neighbors.
Yeah.
You're like, what are the neighbors doing? And you can just, and if you watch long enough, they're usually doing something with breeding in the summer. They're busy. Maybe in some ways, maybe you're learning even more too, if you're atlasing.
So your job is a regional coordinator. Like, what exactly do you do?
So myself, and Ann Swaim, we're co-regional coordinators for the Hudson region. So we kind of like oversee counties in the Hudson region. So like Ulster, Dutchess, Orange, Sullivan, Putnam, Westchester, Rockland, and Columbia County. So we answer questions. We assist. There's a sign-up map online. So we'll check that and sign people up. will give talks and walks. Yeah, that's like pretty important, like the engagement part, like getting people interested and getting people to like go, you know, do some atlasing, take on a little bit more. When we do block review, obviously that's picking up more now because we're a little bit further into the study. So you want to get blocks completed. So we have to review blocks for different criteria. Have they been visited over 20 hours? Like, have all the habitats been visited? Are like all the species represented? And we have to get 45 probable or confirmed species in a block.
Checking how it's going, the progress of each block.
Yeah. And you can kind of like look at a block. You can also, like, if people don't want to, there are people who sign up for the block, but if that's too intimidating, someone could just say, hey, Wendy, what do I need to do? And I could say, well, if you go to this block, it's not complete yet, but if you go, you know, these are some species you can look for, or just go and code as many as you can.
I think during the training, I was told that if you want, you can be the, what's the word, the basically the person who owns this block.
Yeah.
What's the term again? Like a priority.
The principal atlaser.
The principal atlaser. You can be principal atlaser. Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I can. Like, I don't think so. It felt too much like.
Yeah, it was
too much of a responsibility that I don't think I can meet. But yeah, I think one of the things that really made me feel easy about it was that just do however the amount you can, whatever the time you can take. If you're a beginner, there's you can do as a beginner. If you're experienced, then obviously there's more you can do. But everybody, only if you're interested, can do something, and everything adds up to the atlas. And that was kind of encouraging thing. So that leads to the next question of, I thought it's got this like activism aspect of birding that I had never thought about before learning this. Even to have an opinion or to vote in local policies or what kind of development you want in your own town, you don't want the nature to be destroyed, or you don't want the bird's habitat to be destroyed. And you have to have a solid data to back up, you know, this development is not feasible because of this and this and this data. Like, it's not an anecdotal. The development has to happen in some places.
Yeah.
People have to run their business, or economical development is equally important. But really, the matter of what's the right way to do it. And so I was not aware of that, you know, aspect of birding. I'm just like, took up this hobby casually, and it was all just about going out and see birds, and that's nice. But it actually can be part of activism. A lot of people are eager to take actions about what's happening in our community.
Yep.
So yeah, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, like all these citizen science projects that we do, like all this data is like from citizen science. Like every time you put something into eBird, all the Christmas bird counts going back like years and years, like breeding bird atlases that take place in all over the states, like all of that contributes to like the data and the knowledge so that we can make informed decisions about like how we manage environments. So like a few years ago, there was this big study, like 3 billion birds gone. It was like in 2019. Like, all of that data came from breeding bird surveys and citizen science surveys. And it's, you know, it's over a span of years, so you can really tell from, like, 50 years ago to today what has happened. And the thing that stood out to me most, so, you know, 3 billion birds lost, waterfowl species are doing okay because the wetlands are being managed to support their populations. So that's like a success story. That's the kind of thing this data can inform. I mean, like bald eagles and osprey and raptors with like the DDT, now that it's banned. The study's not over, but like you can go and look at the map on the website, on the Atlas website, and see like where the bald eagles are now in comparison to where they were 20 years ago. And there's like a really big difference in the map. You can see all up and down the Hudson confirmed breeding and nests. And that's because we took action to ban DDT, and like it works. So it's like kind of hopeful in a way.
Is there any specific things that's happening as far as you know around here? Like, say, like somebody's trying to build a solar panels?
You know what there is? This has just come up. Blue Chip Farm, which is in southern Ulster County near the Shwangunk grasslands. It's a horse farm, and they're talking about being developed. So I know there was like a meeting like last week, and I think people are going to be on that. It's this old airfield. In the summer, it's filled with like bobolinks and grasshopper sparrows and meadowlarks. And in the summer, it's like migration spot for like northern harrier and short-eared owl. And it's just really nice, and this farm butts up against it. That is a pretty hot issue at the moment.
So are the citizens bring up this data from the bird atlas?
I'm not sure at this point, like, how they would use that. The fact that it's next to this, like, kind of sensitive preserve area.
But in that situation, definitely there's some information that they can...
Yeah. Overall, like, grassland bird species are not doing well. So that could definitely play into the equation.
If developers willing to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's going to go forward. Maybe there's some concessions that can be had.
Okay. So we are doing this interview on the day of Big Sit in Kingston Point. This particular point is to raise funds for the New York Breeding Bird Atlas.
Yep.
How would the collected funds be used? And how can listeners support Atlas in addition to donation?
Yeah. So the funds raised will be used to... There are staff and IT expenses and office expenses and event expenses. We're also hiring people to do some targeted atlasing and some priority blocks that are not getting a lot of attention in the Adirondacks specifically right now. They're pretty under atlased, so there is a need to have checks go out and do that. So when the study ends, there's also like a number of years where the data is going to need to be analyzed and a book will be produced. So any funds raised go towards all of that. And outside of, you know, donations are great, but biggest thing would be to go out and atlas in a priority block. You could take ownership over, become the principal atlaser, or asking the regional coordinator, like, where you could go if it's too much to, like, go to the website and try to figure out what priority block needs help. Mm-hmm. But that's really big. We have 2 years left, so we really need people to, like...
Involved now.
Get involved now, yeah.
I found it really helpful to get the training.
Yep.
So if people wanted to join training like that, can they contact you?
Yeah. Yep. They can contact me or any other regional coordinator near them. All of our email addresses and like where we cover is on the website. And there are walks already scheduled. And there's a calendar on the website where you can see if there's a walk near you. A lot of the walks or talks I've done have been in conjunction with John Burroughs Natural History Society, but I put it on the Atlas calendar as well.
Okay, so people can find those information at the Atlas website.
Yep.
So this question is a little bit more personal, I guess. What is your favorite local bird? Could you describe what it looks and sound like and give us a tip on how to find it?
Yeah, I don't even think I have a favorite bird. Like, I can't even... Like, it changes from day to day. So, like, So, I really enjoy hearing robins when I wake up in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And robin is a very common bird. And it just... There's some, like, deja vu, like, thing with my childhood. You know, I wasn't, like, didn't know a lot about birds then, but, like, I knew the robin, and I knew when I heard it, and it was, like, early in the morning before anything started to go. You know, anything started to get busy or it started to get noisy. Not that robin's my favorite bird, but it really, it's, like, what time of year is it? What day is it? What was, like, the last bird that I heard or saw? So that's not really much of an answer. But also with, like, this atlasing, and now that I'm, like, looking at things differently, then I see, like, some crazy, like, courtship behavior. Like, last year I was looking at grackles more closely, and they do this, like, weird thing where they kind of like hunch their backs and they're on the ground and they start sort of like waddling. And I mean, that was like crazy. Like, why didn't I ever notice that before?
Yeah, Robin. People don't really need a tip to find Robin.
No, no. I think most it's just like appreciating everything that's around you.
You know, you said that some blocks are not covered so well. And I also heard in the training that the people are not so much out during the night, doing the birding at night, for a very understandable reason. But I bought a night vision monocular.
Oh, cool.
And so I was thinking, maybe I want to like go out and try this thing.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is I don't know what to look for, and I don't know like what to be careful about. Like, I was told that maybe I should be careful of the bear.
I feel like humans are more
threatening.
More threatening than a bear. There was one recommendation of like driving, stopping and listening, and then driving a little more. But like, I actually just like to like find a spot, park, and get out and walk.
Yeah.
Because you hear more, like really you hear stuff at night more than you see. Like if you're standing near your car, people are going to stop and they're going to be like, are you okay? And like, you don't really, you know, like that's nice, but you don't want them to
stop. You
don't
want any attention like that.
That's my take on that, is just to like get out and walk. And you hear things. Like if there's like a breeding barred owl around, like you're going to know because it's loud.
So if you hear the call... I mean, this night vision monocular is like a really cheap stuff. Like, it's not going to give me that much of an information.
Yeah, I mean, if you hear a barred owl, you would record it as singing.
Mm-hmm. So actually, get recording must be a good way to figure out.
Yeah, you're gonna hear stuff more than you're gonna see anything. You'd be lucky to see something. I think like whippoorwills as well.
But so I can count it as a sighting if I.
Yeah, you can. Oh, yeah, sound. Yeah, absolutely. There's not. It's not like there's a lot of stuff out at night, so right. I think it's like it's actually more doable
than during the daytime.
Yeah, because there's not like all this chatter going on.
So traffic noise and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'll give it a.
Yeah,
shot
you should give it a shot. I mean, whippoorwills. I mean, they say whippoorwill.
They say their name.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good to know. So that's my actually personal question.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Was Farfisa Gnome Fish Chord from Catskills' Rodney Allen Greenbat from his 2021 album To Just Be. I'm Tom Rowe here in Acre with some of the things on the WGXC
community calendar online at WGXC.org. You can go there, and there's an add an event button. You can add your own event and soon hear people like me reading it on the radio and people around the world seeing it online in the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org. Events like Thursday, June 1st, the Hudson Thursday Market is back at the Public Square. That's from 4 to 7 p.m. Public Square is that park between 7th Street and Columbia and Warren Streets. And vendors this year include Common Hands Farm, Cone's Bread, Sergio Rico, Willowwood Farm, Harvey Mountain Alchemy, Charlie Miller, Sacred Henna, Coxsackie Bee Goods, Farm On Foundation, Red Oak Farm, Autonomous Coffee, and more. Thursday, June 1st, you can also learn to decorate a Western hat at 5 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library in preparation for the 14th Annual Hudson Pride Parade. Thursday, June 1st at 7:30 p.m., the East of Berlin show returns for another weekend. It's by Hannah Moskovich, and it's all weekend at the Bridge Street Theater. Friday, June 2nd, the next Festival of Emerging Artists is at 7:30 p.m. at PS 21 in Chatham. Features works by guitarist and composer Yvette Young, 2022 Pulitzer finalist Leheu Lenzilali, and composer and violinist Shea Buford, among others. Saturday, June 3rd, there's a Hikes to Poets Ledge, a hike to Poets Ledge, from the Mountaintop Historical Society in Palinville at 9:30 a.m. Saturday, June 3rd. It's also Big Truck Day, 10:30 a.m. at the Museum of Firefighting in Hudson. With all sorts of big trucks to see. There are vowel movements Saturday, June 3rd at the Hudson Opera House, Hudson Hall, whatever you want to call it. It's an evening of song from drag artist Pretty LeMay, pianist David Sitowski. East of Berlin continues at the Bridge Street Theater Saturday, June 3rd at 7:30 p.m. and at 2 p.m. on Sunday, June 4th. There's also the traditional Irish music session Sunday, June 4th at the Shamrock House from 2 to 5 p.m. in East Durham. These events and more are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
A British solar panel manufacturer has set a new world record for cell efficiency at 28.6%. Global investment in solar will, for the first time in 2023, surpass global investment in oil. And arbitrary rulings by the Ohio Power Siting Board threaten solar development within that state, according to industry advocates. I'm Jay Warmke with Blue Rock Station, and this is the news from the solar industry for the week of May 29th. So a British firm, Oxford PV, which is a spin-off from Oxford University, has set a new world record for efficiency for solar panels. That is 28.6%. This is a tandem solar panel or solar cell that takes perovskite and places it on top of a silicon wafer. Normally, silicon solar panels get an efficiency of between 20 and 24%. They do plan on targeting efficiencies as high as 30% within the next 2 years. Global investment in solar will, for the first time, surpass the global investment in oil, according to the IEA, the International Energy Agency. Now, they expect that there will be about $380 billion invested in solar, which will be more than the investment in oil. And when you look at renewables as a whole versus fossil fuels, they anticipate $1.7 trillion of investment in renewable versus about $1 trillion in fossil fuels. Now, the fossil fuel industry is still doing well. In fact, they anticipate a 7% increase in investment in fossil fuels, bringing it up to the pre-COVID levels of 2019. But that's about twice the investment that industry experts target if we were to reach the net zero emissions goals of 2030. The top investors in renewable energy are China, number one, European Union, number two, and USA is number three. The National Resources Defense Council reported this week that interconnection delays are threatening renewable energy goals here in this country. Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratories did report that it's on average about a five-year delay for large solar installations before they receive approval to connect to the grid. In fact, there is currently more capacity waiting in line for approval, renewable energy capacity, than the capacity that exists on the grid today. So more than double the capacity if these proposed plans were approved. The problem is there are a number of regional, state, local utility rules, all of which conflict, and it tends to be a moving target. So there is a need for widespread interconnection upgrading of the system. A string of project denials by the Ohio Power Siting Board have been termed arbitrary and threaten solar development within that state, according to industry experts. Now, the Power Board often cites local opposition as the reason for refusing these particular projects. Solar advocates say, all right, well, then why are not the same guidelines applied to fossil fuel projects? For example, they point out a 2016 project, a natural gas pipeline, did receive 1,390 opposition comments, yet it was approved. But a recent solar project that received 40 opposition comments, they deemed this was too much for the project to proceed. There are a number of groups out there that are creating opposition to the large-scale solar. Groups like Citizens for Responsible Solar have been found to fund money, large money from far-right political groups, from climate denier groups, as well as fossil fuel industry groups, to make the opposition to these solar projects appear to be grassroots in nature. Siemens Company, a German electronics firm, has opened up their second EV charging station factory in Texas. Their goal is to produce more than 1 million units per year for the U.S. market. They have already spent about $3 billion over the last 4 years on this project. They will manufacture what they're calling the VersiCharge Blue system, 48 to 80 amps, and they are trying to do this to meet the Made in America demand from the IRA. And Enphase has launched a new residential battery system. The IQ Battery 5P is a lithium iron phosphate composition, or LFP. It comes in 3.84 or 7.68 kW, 15-year warranty, integrated controls, looking for shipping in the last quarter of this year. And that's the news from the solar industry for this week. We'll see you next week.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Raymond Pignon is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Coxsackie Mayor Mark Evans said an apparent petroleum spill in the Hudson River May 28th that shut down a beach, boat launch, and docks there may not have been oil. Press release from the Department of Environmental Conservation on May 29th said, and I quote, on May 28th, DEC was notified of an apparent petroleum spill causing a sheen on the Hudson River in and around Coxsackie. DEC spill response experts and environmental conservation police officers responded to the scene and worked to trace the source of the spill as part of the investigation. DEC spill responders and ECOs continued to investigate and assess the extent of the oil sheen on Monday and found it had largely dissipated. A source has not yet been identified. DEC spill response and ECOs will continue to periodically monitor the river in the coming days. U.S. Coast Guard personnel are also continuing to monitor the situation in coordination with DEC. The boat launch at Coxsackie Riverside Park reopened Sunday evening, end quote. But Evans said on May 29th that, and I quote, the first report that went out said that it was an oil spill, but it wasn't oil, it was some other substance, end quote. Even though there was something in the Hudson River, Evans just suggested those who wanted to get in the water could do so nearby. He said, and I quote, we lost a little business, but the people who couldn't use the boat launch were mostly local, and they knew they could go to Athens and Catskill, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin reports in the Times Union that the Capital Region could get a third offshore wind hub in East Greenbush to go along with others at the Port of Albany and the Port of Coeymans. Vestas, a Danish wind power company, took an option in March to purchase a 112-acre wind port location, which is just south of the border with Rensselaer across from the Hudson River in East Greenbush. Officials from Vestas did not comment to the newspaper about their plans to build a new port on the site. But the option to purchase the East Greenbush land came from Vestas Blades American, so they may want the port for a blade-making facility. New York mandates by 2030 getting 70% of its energy from renewable sources such as solar or wind and a zero-emission power grid by 2040. So much renewable infrastructure needs to be built, and large windmills need to travel on barges to be put in place offshore. This summer, the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority is expected to announce the winners in their third solicitation to develop offshore wind, so more about the new site might be known then. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports that Democrat Pat Ryan is leaning toward voting for the bill to raise the nation's debt limit hashed out by President Joe Biden and Republican House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Usually bills to raise the debt limit and avoid default pass without note in Congress, but this year McCarthy held the debt limit hostage, demanding spending cuts for passage. Ryan, who represents the 18th Congressional District, is leaning toward supporting it. Ryan said, and I quote, I read the whole bill. It's 99 pages, so I'm reviewing it now. We've both got to divert default, but also make sure we support our national security, our veterans, and we don't hurt vulnerable people, kids and seniors in particular, end quote. Another local congressional representative, Republican Elise Stefanik, will definitely vote for the bill. She said, and I quote, this is a historic Republican victory. It will cut spending year over year, end quote. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. Thank you.
stated that absolute uniform motion cannot be detected. She also contended that the speed of light was independent of the motion of the source. And perhaps that's why Einstein's suits all looked the same. So it was in this man's world that Einstein went on to claim the fame for those theories of his wife. But it was in later years that Planck became very envious of Einstein, and it was at that point that he sold Einstein down the river in favor of the Central Committee. So in the Garden of Eden, or was that in the Garden of Eden? Anyways, there were these right-to-lifers going around saying, "Hey, what if Einstein's mother had had an abortion?" Well, that's simple. We wouldn't have the atomic bomb.
But, I thought Einstein's theories were actually those of his wife.
Well, could it be that Pavlov's theories were actually those of his dog? Maybe Schrodinger, those of his cat? Louis Pasteur, those of his cow? Wilbur, those of his horse? Fred, those of Barney? I know. Freud's theories were actually those of his mother.
Back and put some to the ride, but I never thought they'd put me in the good squad.